This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program. Welcome to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. Now, here's your host, Wayne Zell.
Good morning and welcome to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, your host of this fast-paced half hour of special topics and special guests designed to help you realize your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. So sit back with your cup of coffee, your muffin, or whatever you're having for breakfast and enjoy the show. Today, we're going to be talking about the fiscal cliff. It's fast approaching, rapidly approaching us. But before I do, let me tell you a little bit about our sponsor, Odin Feldman and Pittleman, law firm located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire DC metro area with clients all across the country. If you'd like to learn more about us, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com. Also, I invite you to subscribe to my blog, blueprintforwealth.org, where you can get audio, video, and articles of interest in tax, estate planning, and business planning. But today, it's all about the fiscal cliff. We're in November, and we're fast approaching the end of the year when we hit this cliff. It is a term that refers to the effect of a number of laws, which, if they go unchanged, could result in massive tax increases, spending cuts, and a corresponding reduction in the budget deficit, which some argue, and the Congressional Budget Office agrees, could significantly reduce economic growth beginning in 2013. The laws include tax increases due to the expiration of the so-called Bush tax cuts that were enacted in 2001 and 2003, and across-the-board spending cuts, commonly referred to as sequestration, that was enacted under the Budget Control Act of 2011. The year-over-year changes for fiscal years 2012 and 2013 include a 20% increase in tax revenue and only a 0.25% reduction in spending. So it's really the tax increases that are going to have the biggest economic impact on our economy in the United States. Some major domestic programs like Social Security, federal pensions, and veterans benefits are exempted from the spending cuts. These are known as entitlements. Spending for federal agencies and cabinet departments, including defense, would be reduced through the across-the-board cuts. The CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, reports an increased risk of recession in 2013 if the deficit is reduced suddenly, while indicating that lower deficits and debt over time will improve long-term economic growth. Well, that's just logical. If we can reduce our debt load, then we'll have a better performing economy in the long run. The deficit for 2013 is projected to be reduced by roughly half. The cumulative deficit over the next 10 years is expected to be lowered by as much as $7.1 trillion, or 70%. The Budget Control Act of 2011 was passed in a very partisan political stalemate. Democrats and Republicans couldn't agree on how to reduce the deficit, and it was thought that the blunt cuts of budget sequestration and sharp revenue increases would be mutually undesirable to both parties. So, that provides the reason and the deadline to bring both sides together to solve the deficit problem. The projected effects of these changes have led to calls both inside and outside of Congress to extend some or all of the tax cuts. As you've heard most recently, the president wants to extend the tax cuts for all but those making over $250,000 a year. They also want to replace the across-the-board sequestration or cuts with more targeted cutbacks. Many have speculated that any change is unlikely to come until the very end of this year in the lame duck session that is already convening right now. Additionally, the debate may be exacerbated, made worse, by the expectation that the debt ceiling is expected to be reached before the end of 2012, unless, quote-unquote, extraordinary measures are used. So we've got a lot of work ahead of us. Who came up with this term, the fiscal cliff? Well, it was the Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke in February of this year who was the first person to use the fiscal cliff analogy or statement. He was testifying before the House Financial Services Committee, and he described that a massive fiscal cliff, of large spending cuts and tax increases would take place on January 1, 2013. Now, a little bit of history. Back in 2010, if you recall, at the end of the year, December 17th to be exact, Congress passed the Tax Relief Unemployment Insurance Reauthorization and Job Creation Act of 2010. A lot of words to describe an act that extended the Bush tax cuts for an additional 2 years and patched exemptions in the alternative minimum tax only for 2011. I repeat, only for 2011 was the AMT fixed. The AMT, the alternative minimum tax, will apply in 2012 unless they fix it before the end of this year. They expect an additional 28 million Americans, including many middle-class Americans, to be subject to this minimum tax. The act, the 2010 act, also authorized a one-year reduction in Social Security taxes from 6.2% down to 4.2%. That was extended in 2012, earlier this year. So one of the taxes that is going to come into effect on January 1 is a tax that we had lived with for many, many years, the FICA tax, and that will go back up to 6.2%. Many do not expect Congress to change that from coming back into effect. Back in August of 2011, the Budget Control Act was passed. It was part of an agreement to resolve the debt ceiling crisis. And of course, if you remember, it led to the downgrading of our debt in the United States. The act provided for a joint select committee on deficit reduction, the so-called super committee, which we've heard so much about. They were tasked with producing legislation by November of 2011 that would have decreased the deficit by $1.2 trillion over 10 years. Under the law, if the committee failed to do so, as in fact it has failed to do, another part of the act directed automatic sequestration across the board cuts, split evenly between defense and domestic spending, beginning on January 2, 2013. Also, the Affordable Health Care Act imposed many new taxes on families that are making more than $250,000 a year, or $200,000 for individuals, including the 3.8% net investment income tax that gets tacked on to the highest tax rate of 39.6%, raising taxes to as high a rate as 43.4% just for federal purposes alone. Now remember, this patch to the AMT exemptions expired at the end of 2011. Technically, the AMT thresholds immediately reverted back to what they were in 2000, a drop of 26% for single people and 40% for married couples. Anyone over these reduced exemption thresholds at the end of 2012 will be subject to the AMT unless they fix it before the end of this year. Now, the current laws that are leading to the fiscal cliff that we're about to fall off of are the following. Number one, expiration of Obama's tax cuts that were provided for in the 2010 Tax Relief Act. Number two, sequestration under the Budget Control Act of 2011. Number three, reversion of the AMT tax thresholds to their 2000 tax year levels. Number four, expirations of measures that delay Medicare sustainable growth rate from going into effect, the so-called doc fix, most recently extended in 2012, meaning that Medicare payments to doctors will drop dramatically on January the 1st. Next, expiration of the 2% Social Security payroll tax cut. These are all the things that I've mentioned, which will expire on January the 1st. Also, expiration of federal unemployment benefits, most recently extended earlier this year in the 2012 Act. And finally, new taxes that are imposed under the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act and the Health Care and Education Reconciliation Act, the Obamacare provisions of 2010. Without new laws, without new legislation, these provisions automatically go into effect on January 1 or January 2nd of 2013, except for the AMT, which automatically is in effect now. Some provisions will increase taxes. For example, the expiration of the Bush and FICA payroll taxes and the new affordable care taxes and AMT thresholds are expected to raise over $607 billion in 2013 alone. Others will reduce spending, sequestration, expiration of unemployment benefits, etc. Proposals to avoid the fiscal cliff include repealing legislation that contains certain of these provisions or passing new laws to extend provisions that are due to expire. Different proposals may include changes to some or all of the above provisions. For example, the CBO's alternative fiscal scenario in their budget analysis includes only the items that I first listed, including the expiration of the Obama tax cuts, across-the-board spending cuts, AMT fiscal, the patch remaining at the low levels, and expiration of the Medicare payments. So there are some that are debating right now whether or not to allow for the Bush tax cuts to continue. The Republicans, of course, have said that they don't want any tax cuts to expire. They want all of the Bush tax cuts to remain in effect, including those on the wealthy. Interestingly, though, and keep this in mind, about 80% of those taxes are paid by people making more than $250,000 a year. So it's the quote-unquote wealthy that will bear the burden of this failure to extend the Bush tax cuts if President Obama has his way. Stay tuned for future radio shows where we'll talk about the fiscal cliff, how close we are to falling off it, or whether or not Congress and the president can rescue us. I'm Wayne Zell, and you're listening to Blueprint for Wealth.
You're listening to Blueprint for Wealth with Wayne Zell. Learn how to better prepare for your future when Blueprint for Wealth returns in a moment.
A Legal Minute with Wayne Zell.
Depending on the nature of the business entity, a business may need several kinds of insurance to guarantee coverage. A business may need contents insurance to cover inventory and supplies. General liability insurance may be necessary to cover accidents that occur on a property. Business owners may also want to obtain coverage on motor vehicles used in the business. Besides insurance for the business, the owner may want to obtain insurance for the business's products and actions. If the business performs repairs or services, completed operations insurance may be necessary to cover occurrences when a customer claims injury or damages after using something that was fixed by the business. To cover claims arising from products, the owner will want product liability insurance, and for professional services, such as a law firm or medical practice group, professional liability insurance may be necessary to cover damages. If you want more information on the types of insurance coverage you need, contact one of the experienced business lawyers at Odin, Feldman, and Pittleman.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth, a program dedicated to securing your personal dreams of wealth and freedom. If you have questions for Wayne, you can email him at radio@ofplaw.com or call him at 703-218-2100. Now back to your host, Wayne Zell.
Welcome back to Blueprint for Wealth. I'm Wayne Zell, and with me today is my special guest, Clark Kendall. Welcome, Clark. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thanks for being here. Clark has over 30 years of experience in investment management and wealth management strategy. In the 90s, he became one of the first financial professionals with both a CFA, that's a Chartered Financial Analyst, and Certified Financial Planner, CFP, designation. He's the founder of Kendall Capital, and he's focused on providing intelligent, independent financial direction to high net worth individuals and families in and around Montgomery County. And he grew up in Montgomery County and went to Wooten High School. So we were talking about that before the show started. So this is good. It's old home week down at WFED down here. And Clark, tell me, how did you get started in your career?
Well, I started way back in Actually, the mid-70s, I had my own grass-cutting business in Montgomery Square in Rockville, Maryland.
Sure.
Had about a dozen yards, charging $5 a yard to cut the grass. And back in the 70s.
That's pretty good money.
Yeah.
$5 a yard. I remember that.
$60 a week. And after I bought my fancy bicycle for $70.
You retired.
You really couldn't buy an iPhone or an iPad back then. So no. I was making deposits into the local bank, and my dad got me going and buying a few stocks here and there. And by middle school, he was taking me to shareholder meetings and teaching me about return on equity and internal rate of return. So it was a layup for me to make a career out of this.
Wow, what a great education from your dad.
Yeah.
I really admire that. Did you have a mentor? I guess your dad was one of the mentors. And what resources did you use to grow Kendall Capital the way you've done it and where you've ended up today?
Well, really, besides my father being a mentor, one of the great mentors I had was in their early 90s, I started the trust department for Sandy Spring Bank.
Sure.
And back then, Willard Derrick was the president. He was really the force behind growing Sandy Spring Bank from the small $10 million bank to, the time of his death and departure from Sandy Spring Bank, it was over $2 billion. But one of the things I learned from him is he cared about people. And to highlight this, Willard would carry around a little cheat sheet card, a 3x5 card with all the employees' names, the spouses, and the spouse and the children. And he, of the 120 people at the time that worked for Sandy Spring Bank, he knew everybody's name and what was going on. And he really cared about people. And from that, you know, he grew that bank to be the force that it is, you know, in Montgomery County.
That's impressive.
And so I try to take that same philosophy to wealth management, to investment management, to running my business, is to caring about people. And when you care about people, the money and the assets all come into place after that. But the key thing is to care about individuals.
I agree with that. That's a great philosophy. Tell me about the service offerings you provide at Kendall Capital.
Well, Kendall Capital Management is an independent, fee-only investment advisory firm. I think one of the key things that differentiates us as far as investment management, wealth management, is we are a fiduciary. We look out for the client's best interest at all times, and that even comes back to my philosophy with Willard. We care about individuals. In the marketplace, I previously went from Sandy Spring Bank, and I worked for the Royal Bank of Canada and worked for another firm that focused on the $10 million clientele and above. But I found, being raised here and knowing the market of Montgomery County in the Washington, D.C. area, that middle-class millionaire is kind of lost in the mix. And so I like to think we bring that kind of that Bessemer Trust, Goldman Sachs level of client service down to that middle-class millionaire that's right here in our own community.
Have you trademarked that term? You should think about it. Middle-class millionaire, that's a great, great term.
The Warren Buffett, I run across time and time again, you know, individuals who, you know, have been thrifty savers, and if you've got a nice home and your school teachers and policemen who have been thrifty and, you know, you save 10%, give 10% away and enjoy life with 80%. Many times those individuals in their 50s or 60s, you know, have that $1 million nest egg.
That's a great philosophy. And I like your approach of dealing with people that really know how to save. And then you're there to protect and grow their savings. Tell me about Montgomery County and D.C. I mean, we grew up there. Why did you end up staying here? A lot of our compatriots left the area and didn't come back, but a lot of us have stayed around the area. Why did you pick Montgomery County and D.C. as the home base for your business?
Well, two reasons. I think that the simple and obvious reason is my parents still live here. I have three brothers that live here. My wife, a family lives here, her parents and sister-in-law. And so at Christmas time and Thanksgiving, as we come around, we simply drive around the Beltway to visit our family members.
That's nice.
But secondly, this market is ripe for that middle-class million. The consumers in the DCR market, Montgomery County, are well-educated. They have accumulated wealth. So it's a very good market to go after as far as what we're trying to deliver to our clientele.
What benefits do your customers get by working with an independent fee-only advisory firm? First, when you say independent fee-only, tell me what that means. And then what are the benefits that everybody derives?
I think, you know, the simple example is we sit on the same side of the table as the clients. We do charge an investment advisory fee to manage the assets on an annual basis. But the key issue is, you know, whether or not they put that money in an IRA or whether or not they Roth that IRA, do a 401k, whether they do a bypass trust, whether we end up buying a CD or treasury, an ETF or mutual fund, we're buying what's in the client's best interest. And we're at the level of a fiduciary, much like you work as an attorney.
Right.
Your job is to represent them. We don't have an investment banking arm of our company. When Facebook comes public at 30 times revenue, you know, at 50 times earnings, we pass on that because we don't think that's in the client's best interest to own that security.
It's sexy. It's hot, but it may not be in the best interest of the client.
So, and so we don't, and we're not paid a commission to put someone into an annuity,
right,
or to sell a particular product. But we do, not to say that we never use annuities and to say that we'll never buy a Facebook security. We buy it when we think it's in the client's best interest. So we sleep well. I think the key issue for me is, you know, to wake up in the morning, look at myself in the mirror and say, you know, I'm doing what's in the client's best interest, and it shows in our client retention, it shows in our investment performance. So I'm very proud of what we do.
What areas are people struggling with as they're doing their financial planning?
I think a key issue is a lot of people, you know, want to put the keys on the table and quit, but they don't know if they have enough money to retire.
Right. I hear that all the time.
And unlike our parents and our grandparents, that retired at 65 and had a life expectancy of 5 to 7 years. You know, the statistically, a couple 65 years of age, there's a 50% chance one of them will live to be 90. Mm. So many times, you know, we're having to plan, you know, 20, 25, 30 years. So we're thinking 2030, 2035, 2040.
Right.
So longevity is a big issue for those clients. And then the other thing that's really, you know, addressing clientele is inflation. We have a consumer price index at 2.5%, yet at the same time we have 10-year treasuries yielding 1.5%. So you
doesn't make any sense, does it?
No, it doesn't make any sense. So you're losing, 1% purchasing power, you know, per year by trying to be safe. So to maintain that purchasing power, if you have $1 million, $1 million will buy you, you know, 20 nice cars, 2 nice houses in Montgomery County. You want to be able to maintain that person or couple's, you know, purchasing power over the long term.
Right. And it's hard to do, particularly in this environment, particularly when, you know, the doomsayers are saying, hey, get ready for the next adjustment to the stock market. It's coming and it's going to cut everything in half. And people are getting scared. They're pulling money out of stocks and equities and putting them, I don't know where, in cash. Mm-hmm. What are you seeing and what are you advising your clients in this fairly volatile environment as the fiscal cliff approaches?
As a fiscal cliff. I mean, I think the key issue is to utilize short-term investment products for short-term needs. For the money you need to spend 1 to 3 years, make sure you are utilizing CDs, treasuries, money market accounts. Utilize intermediate-term investment products to meet the needs, you know, 4 to 10 years out. That might be utility stocks, you know, corporate bonds.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but long-term, 10 years on beyond, you know, utilize inflation hedge type of investments, stocks and real estate long term, you know, historically will beat bonds and cash. And so I think to put together a blended portfolio along those lines. The other thing coming back is when we look back upon it in 30 years of experience and, you know, we had the 1987 crash and how vividly I remember that.
Wow.
And, you know, during the early 90s, we had the savings and loan crisis.
Right.
And we had the dot-com boom and we've had an oil crisis. And
we had 2007 and 2008. So,
yeah. And I think the key thing to remember is stocks aren't cheap when there's a bunch of good news out there. And so I think you need to play it out and develop an overall strategy and plan. And unless you have a long-term strategy and plan, you walk around being nervous about, you know, what's going to happen next Tuesday. But if you have a disciplined long-term strategy and approach in place, it really brings down your your anxiety level.
How can people make sure that they are maximizing their retirement wisely and saving enough for their eventual needs? How do they do that?
Well, of course, I think they look for professional advice. I like to always use the analogy of being a home builder. My wife and I, 12 years ago, built our own home. My wife designed it, but it was the home builder who came through and said, listen here, I've built 100 homes before you. You should probably put the light switches here, and you should probably think about, you know, facing the home this way, because he had done it so many times. And then on the opposite side of the coin, he had some contracted out all the work. But, you know, as we were building the house, there was something that wasn't right with the plumber. Mm-hmm. And he was able to go back to the plumber and said, you know, the plumbing in the Kendall's house is not right. And if you want to build the next 30 houses, you know, correct that plumbing problem. And I guess my point is, people can build their own financial house themselves. But right. When you pull in a professional, one is they've done it 100 times before. And secondly, many times, like the builder with the plumber, they have buying power to look out in for your best interest. And so I like to sort of compare myself to the financial house builder.
Okay. That's good. That's a great analogy. Another great analogy by Clark Kendall, who is Kendall Capital in Montgomery County. What advice do you give business leaders and entrepreneurs who are just starting out in their entrepreneurial pursuits today?
Well, I think the key issue, if you're starting any business, and whether or not you're selling cheeseburgers on the corner or having a lawn care service, you think about, you know, what's your competitive advantage? What do you do better than anybody else in the marketplace? And I think once you determine what makes you competitive, then your job is to go out and to be able to tell that to the marketplace. You can define your market as far as what you're trying to accomplish. Your cheeseburger, you know, cheeseburgers you don't want to sell, you know, at the health nut store. You know, cheeseburgers you want to sell to high school boys who are hungry.
And, I have two of those.
That's right. And once you just define what your market is, it helps you as far as, you know, targeting that market. It helps you to differentiating it from a McDonald's cheeseburger to a Wendy's cheeseburger. So I think that's a key thing to do is for any new business owner to really what makes you competitive and different.
How is Kendall Capital different from its competitors in terms of what you do?
Well, I think, you know, I think the key thing is we are a fee-only investment advisory firm. We're targeting the middle-class millionaires. You know, we bring that client-level service from Goldman Sachs and Bessemer Trust down. We sit on the same side of the table as the client, and we're local. And so that you have access to us that you might not have from the larger institutions.
Well, that's a good segue. If people want to get in touch with you and they want to find out more about you and your firm, how do they do that?
Two different ways. You can now on the internet, you can visit us at kendallcapital.com. And we're local right here in Rockville at 301-838-9110. And I prefer that old face-to-face meeting to find out really what a client is trying to accomplish. So we're always happy to sit down and visit with a client. We charge nothing to sit down with someone for the first hour, you know, to find out what they're trying to accomplish.
Sure. I think it's a great segue into saying everybody who's interested in Montgomery County and D.C., they want a financial planner, you should talk to Clark Kendall at Kendall Capital. Thanks for being a special guest on Blueprint for Wealth.
Well, thanks for having me. Enjoyed it.
Thank you. And listen next week for another special topic and a special guest. I'm Wayne Zell. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you soon.
You've been listening to Wayne Zell and Blueprint for Wealth. Wayne will be back next Saturday morning at 10 a.m. with your Blueprint for Wealth right here on 1500 AM.
WFED Washington, WWFD Frederick, WWWTFM HD2 Manassas, WTOPFM HD2 Washington. This is Federal News Radio, on the air at 1500 AM and online at federalnewsradio.com. The only radio station in the world dedicated to serving the federal executive and government contractor. It's our mission to provide news and information that helps federal managers do their job better and help facilitate the business of government. Federal News Radio talks to the people who make government work to build a a sense of federal community, discuss best practices, and explore lessons learned. Every weekday from 6 a.m. to 7 p.m., Federal News Radio interviews federal newsmakers one-on-one to explain how their news affects agencies and contractors. Nights and weekends, WFED broadcasts all the action of Washington Nationals baseball, Washington Capitals hockey, the Navy midshipmen, George Washington Colonials, and American University Eagles basketball. Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., the Washington, D.C. home of Navy athletics, and your source for federal news now.
This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard.